This is Selling the Truth, a podcast documentary brought to you by WF360 Productions. This podcast follows the story of a century-old established newspaper that is now at the center of a perfect storm. Really, a global political and cultural storm, almost like a bellwether for the question, who can we trust when it comes to information? It's where the irresistible forces of the digital revolution across global platforms meet the immovable powers of, on the one hand, government, with its desire to control and manipulate information, and, on the other hand, the voracious demands of the consumer marketplace. Is news these days sheer entertainment? Is it propaganda? Is it still possible to write and report informatively, truthfully, even credibly, in a way that creates change by holding the power brokers of politics and industry to account? Imagine a clean window through which we can view the cultural diversity, history, and values of others, and view perceived threats without prejudice and spin. Is that possible? The speed with which media travels around the world raises a question that we'll engage with here. How sophisticated do we need to be to interpret accurately what is now presented as truthful news? Selling the Truth podcast follows this story of what many regarded as an audacious attempt to reconfigure a newspaper, Hong Kong's South China Morning Post, to be a credible interpretive bridge between East and West. Now, this newspaper is based in Hong Kong, which has become the local flashpoint of democratic freedoms meeting state control. And there are rumors about Jack Ma, the founder and CEO of Alibaba, when it bought the South China Morning Post. They say that Jack Ma has been mysteriously and ominously silenced by the Chinese government. You can only imagine an equivalent story in the West, like Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk not being heard from for 3 months before reappearing without explanation as, say, a horticulturalist in New Mexico. Meanwhile, another news outlet in Hong Kong, the pro-democracy Apple Daily, has been closed down. The assets have been frozen and its senior management has been imprisoned. Even the BBC World Service has been banned by the Chinese government from reporting and broadcasting there because of its criticism of Chinese internment of the Uyghur people in mass detention camps. And on top of all this, there is also rumor that the Chinese government has demanded the SEMP be sold to new owners. Now, Jack Ma's motives in having Alibaba buy the South China Morning Post in the first place provoked a lot of speculation, as we'll see. But if Alibaba is now required to sell it, what hope is there for the SEMP going forward? What independent journalists will be left to turn off the lights? To get to this question, I want to go back to the beginning of the story, the time when optimism and opportunity rode alongside doubts and questions. I'm Susan Bird, your host of Selling the Truth. I'm going to lead you through this unique story of a mainstream news outlet in Hong Kong attempting to undergo fundamental change to its business model and its mission. The South China Morning Post is our petri dish, and China, in all its complexity, is the subject matter on which the SEMP experiment is focused. In 2017, a young American tech entrepreneur pulled up stakes in New York and moved to Hong Kong with a vision to turn a local English language newspaper in Hong Kong into a global tech-centric media powerhouse. If he succeeded, he would not just transform a paper, it would impact the culture and the politics of the next century globally. One of the biggest stories of our lifetime is whether China and the West can collaborate, bringing unparalleled prosperity to the world. And if they cannot do so, that failure could bring disastrous Cold War or even worse. These are hugely significant alternatives and tantalizing to speculate about. But they also mean that all of us, not just Chinaphiles, need to know what's going on in China. Let's hear what Nick O'Malley has to say. He was executive director of Harvard's Shorenstein Center, who partnered with me in launching this podcast.
The fate of journalism rests with forces beyond any single newsroom's control. We're seeing changes all over the world at an incredibly rapid rate, from the way information flows to the way cultures and societies work and respond. And any company trying to be successful in the news business has to navigate these incredibly complex flows of information, technology, changes in media and politics and public policy. And doing that with integrity is incredibly hard, incredibly important, and I don't think it has ever been more consequential than it is right now.
China is really going to shape the next couple of hundred years of the planet at a minimum.
I know that a lot of people in the U.S. don't believe that we can ignore China. That time is very, very quickly coming to an end.
This prediction is from Gary Liu, the tech entrepreneur at the center of our story. The year before I met him, Gary was leading a team of 19 people for a company in New York City when Jack Ma's Alibaba, the e-commerce behemoth, made him an offer to become the CEO of a company they had just bought, the 114-year-old South China Morning Post, Hong Kong's flagship newspaper. His job? To rally its more than 1,000 employees in taking on an ambitious mission, namely to lead the conversation about China globally, starting with the United States. They promised him all the money and tech expertise needed, and they promised editorial independence. I've been working with clients in Asia for years. My involvement in this adventure began on the morning of January 5th, 2017, when I met Gary in Hong Kong. He'd been there 3 days. He'd just moved in. He was 33. He looked way younger, and he had a personal style that favors brightly colored socks and sneakers. He's thin, wiry, highly enthusiastic, with a commanding voice filled with certainty. He gives the impression he's used to taking charge, but in a friendly, accessible way. He was not a journalist, and he'd never lived in mainland China, but he is a highly knowledgeable techie, former CEO of Digg, the news aggregator, and before that he was head of Spotify Labs, and he had stints at AOL and Google as well. Listening to his story that morning over coffee, I questioned, could he pull this off? When I asked Gary what success would look like, here's what he said.
I would love to be able to tell you that we really can bridge the gap of understanding between the West and the East. There is a lot of nuance in understanding what China is doing and why China is doing what they're doing. And I think that the South China Morning Post can and should be that explainer.
I decided whether or not he succeeded, this journey just had to be tracked, right? So that others can learn just what it feels like to be one of those people who jump on board to shape big change and are facing decisions and circumstances they could not possibly have anticipated. Months later, we got the green light from Gary and the SEMP giving access to their newsroom, their board of directors, essentially everyone I needed to reach. I put my client commitments on the back burner and returned to Hong Kong to gather information and viewpoints from key players in the media world, SEMP employees, every journalist I could buttonhole, business leaders, academics, even people on the street. And then I collected similar intelligence from people in the West. This first episode outlines what Gary and his team thought they were up against, so you'll see just how ambitious, how audacious a project this was. In later episodes, you'll meet Gary's team, assess their plan, and monitor their progress to learn what it takes to transform an existing business in the face of utterly unpredictable change. First, please note, In gathering content for this series, I rely on the generosity, goodwill, and support of the many people willing to share their views with me and provide the information on which Selling the Truth is built. I learned it's a fact of life in China that even innocuous comments, once shared publicly, easily jeopardize careers and relationships. Consequently, there are many people whose comments I agreed to quote anonymously. That's not ideal, of course, but I feel they nonetheless lend importance to the story, so I've included them. These conversations are candid, unscripted exchanges in offices, restaurants, on the street, in cars, Hong Kong's MTR, the metro, and on the phone via Skype. So despite our sound guru's best efforts, we'll occasionally hear background noises and other distractions. And we'll cite Chinese names Western style, that is, with the surname last. Selling the Truth, Episode 1, Mission Impossible. We know that soon, China will likely be the world's largest economy. We want to be informed about our world, including China, not just what happens in our neighborhood, but what's happening around the globe. And we want the truth. We want sources we can trust. But we know that most people don't have a clue about where media companies get their news or how they make their money.
You know, everything's changing, and we're so far from knowing what's really going on.
So where do I find out? It's not in the newspapers, right? I don't even read the paper.
So could a traditional paper like the SEMP become the English-speaking, digitally native news service we go to for information on China? Or does a Western market stick with Western sources, including Google and Facebook, where lots of people get their news now? And what about the income stream? To hire world-class reporters, send them out to find stories, confirm that they're true, edit and write them up professionally, and distribute them to wide audiences as all the major news sources and papers like the SEMP do, that's expensive. Most people, however, do know that print journalism is under siege because the old business model dependent on advertising is dead. As one of my sources put it,
if the newspaper business sucks, web advertising is not great.
Many newspapers are hemorrhaging money these days. So if the SEMP becomes the global source for information about China, it has to make enough money to stay independent of its new owners and any other source of pressure. Nick O'Malley knows this world firsthand.
Overnight, you cannot staunch the bleeding. The losses in print are so dramatic and at such an aggressive pace, you can't solve them overnight. And so in many ways, Google and Facebook are the enemy because Google and Facebook make all the money.
I've seen them change their algorithm and completely destroy companies.
That's Jesse Ma, who was head of partnerships for the SEMP when I talked with him. And Gary again.
If we don't think about a business model, sustainable economics for news, that we'll all be in trouble in a couple of years. Well, actually, to be frank, we're all kind of in trouble right now.
So the business model itself had to urgently change, not only switching from paper and print to digital online presence, but they had to find partners with influential distribution channels that they didn't control. Here's Jesse Ma again with his candid response to my question about the SEMP's status as a digital media company.
We are very young. As you know, the South China Morning Post is over 100 years old, and its roots are in print publishing. So Gary has sort of a Herculean task to transition over a century-old company that's roots are in print publishing. Print publishing doesn't translate well to digital publishing.
On top of all this, and assuming they succeeded at integrating digital successfully, how did they build an audience in the United States where the level of enthusiasm for information on China, I mean, the demand for news about it, is anybody's guess? Since Jesse Ma talked with me, anti-China rhetoric in the United States has accelerated, adding yet more layers of complexity. Could the SEMP carve out a readership in the West willing to believe or even want to read good news stories from China? Here's one of my anonymous sources.
I do just wonder why Jack Ma wanted the headache. It just seems like that is an extremely risky strategy for a private entrepreneur to take on. Hong Kong itself is a very small market, and the South China Morning Post brand is just, it's not that strong outside of Hong Kong. fact of the matter is that there just are not going to be the New York Times or USA Today in terms of size. There just are not that many people outside of China who are interested in a lot of China news.
Hong Kong's Foreign Correspondents Club, that's the FCC, is where every journalist who has ever set foot in Asia goes to meet peers and competitors and swap war stories. These folks have lots of such exchanges over dinner with lots of alcohol, generally at the main bar. All of them have an opinion about the SEMP, some based on personal experience for the grand old days. Many former SEMP reporters hang out at the FCC. And others are based on bitterness about what they describe as the paper's decline and loss of independence. Several people I met at the FCC claim to have inside knowledge of Alibaba's motivation for buying the SEMP. But it became clear to me that no one really knew. There were comparisons to Jeff Bezos' purchase of the Washington Post. One said, well, like sports teams, a newspaper's a billionaire's plaything, and so it makes sense for Jack to have one, too. This is an American, a man who's been doing business in Asia for years, headquartered in Hong Kong.
I thought, oh, that's a good business move on Jack Ma's part, trying to be like Jeff Bezos, you know, trying to spread out into other areas like the Washington Post, but I don't think that he's going to be able to do what the Washington Post can do. I don't know if he has the stamina or backbone or real gut instinct for it in the same way.
Others were far more cynical. Here's another of my anonymous sources.
Nobody really succeeds in China unless they're allowed to by the party. There are no real outriders, or at least not for very long. The government in Beijing has the capability of quietly saying to those with assets, with money, to do things for them and to control things in a way that suits China's wider interests as they perceive them. It was quid pro quo for Jack Ma, sort of basically making merit with the Communist Party. And Jack Ma, the richest man in China, one of them, may well have been, you know, at a separate lunch being said, well, Mr. Ma, you know, you have all sorts of interests and you are a great friend and a patriot. I think it's more threats than actual goodwill. It's inconceivable that this is anything other than a vehicle, however masked or however surrounded by smoke and mirrors, is a vehicle for Beijing's interests. I mean, everything is.
From the start, therefore, opinions swirled around the motives, the power, and the purpose for the reconstruction of the SEMP. But what was the official line? Well, Alibaba declared its intent in a letter on SEMP's page one. Joe Tsai, vice chair of Alibaba Group and a director of the SEMP, gave this explanation. I'm quoting that page one article here. He said, the South China Morning Post is unique because it focuses on coverage of China in the English language. This is a proposition that is in high demand by readers around the world who care to understand the world's second largest economy. Our vision is to expand the SEMP readership globally through digital distribution and easier access to content. End quote. Now, what Alibaba added elsewhere is that the SEMP would lead the global conversation about China in a fair and balanced way. In their view, Western media's perspective was unnecessarily negative. I met with Joe Tsai, and here's what he said at the time.
Currently, if you just look at the Western media, most of the narrative about China has sort of a negative tinge to it. And I think it's largely because Western journalists look at China as a government that's not a democratic system. It's a one-party governed country. So in the context of everything we see about China that is always sort of negative or slightly negative, we are saying, look, there are a lot of good parts of China. Those stories need to be told. Those sort of positive and uplifting kind of stories are some of the things that people in the West have never heard of.
Other journalists I talked with agreed, referring to the trope that the Western press, when writing about China, focuses only on the big, the bad, and the weird. But the majority of my journalist sources took the opposite view.
They complained the SEMP had lost its objectivity regarding mainland China a while back, before Alibaba. And they didn't see this changing under new ownership. In fact, they took umbrage at the view that the Western media's coverage of China was unduly negative.
Most people in the media industry in Hong Kong believe that when Alibaba bought the SEMP, that was basically the death knell for the SEMP's independence and incisiveness as a newspaper. If there was any doubt about it, it was over.
And then, all too prophetically, in the light of recent events in Hong Kong, the issue of self-censorship came up often.
You can only go so far in China before you start stepping on too many toes. They'll be shut down immediately.
Non-journalists, too, were skeptical about the SEMP's ability to tell the true China story under its new ownership. Here's a senior business leader who's been in Hong Kong for years and questions the SEMP's claim to be the trusted source.
A lot of fake news that emanates, a lot of gossip and rumor and misrepresentation and canards that come out of mainland China. How do you filter that? How do you know what's really the truth?
It's clear. Alibaba's been pouring huge money into this project. Brand new offices, new technology, new management. But they'd need world-class journalists who know the ropes in China to do that kind of investigative reporting they promised to provide. Here's one of my sources again.
I really don't see that they have anybody like that anymore that would be critical or insightful about what's happening in China.
He felt clearly that Jack Ma would not want the SEMP's reporting to upset Chinese authorities.
As much as he's westernized and as much as he has a global vision and he's a great company leader and he's a great, you know, person to attend TED and all the other conferences that he attends, his business is in China. He's not going to buck the administration.
Here's Nick O'Malley's take.
There are lines that you can't cross. And that kind of colors the way America is going to look at China. And I think that is a central challenge for the South China Morning Post. They have to find some way of acknowledging and being honest about the way the Chinese government, Chinese politics, Chinese laws, Chinese culture constrains, restricts, clashes with fundamentally American values and points of view.
To be clear, Gary's team members had their eyes wide open. While in the UK or the USA, rule-breaking journalists know that their jobs could be on the line, in China, breaking the rules could well mean prison time. I asked Jesse Ma what could get in the way of a happy ending to this story.
If Beijing just closes the door, they have incredible power within their own country. Like, if they find ways to just completely block access to us, I mean, that is a huge risk. You know, hopefully we find a way around that, but it's going to be a struggle.
But what did I find in the SEMP's newsroom? Well, not surprisingly, folks were highly sensitive, but I did find believers, and here's one, a 20-year SEMP veteran.
People are talking about SEMP exercising self-censorship and all that bullshit. If you go back and read our stories, you will find we'll do it step by step. We'll try to throw a picture about why this is happening. We try to become that China's insider. And that's what SEMP needs to do to establish its reputation.
Here's the thing. The skepticism I heard from nearly every corner just makes this story all the more interesting and unique to me. The SEMP is not unlike other flagship newspapers struggling to remain relevant, not to mention profitable, in this digital age. In this way, selling the truth is the story of 21st century journalism itself and its ability to provide objective, truthful coverage of news. Plus, the editorial challenges of this particular narrative, situated in Hong Kong, leading the global conversation about China, just add plenty of additional twists and turns. Let's review the challenges facing the SEMP team. They needed to be profitable. To make money, they needed to be global. To be global, they had to be digital. And to build audience, they needed distribution partners. And their news had to be trusted. And that required access to trusted Chinese sources.
I realize in this episode we've only talked about what could get in the way of success for Gary and his team. The challenges are stacked high. It sounds daunting, right? But now that you know what's at stake, in episode 2, we'll look at the positive things this venture has going for it. We'll start with Gary Liu and take it from there. I think you'll be impressed. They had a plan and they were on it. And just when all this sounds terribly serious, there is an aspect of lightheartedness. Consider this. When I asked Gary who inspired him, he didn't respond with Churchill or Abraham Lincoln or Steve Jobs. He uses Bill Watterson's Calvin and Hobbes comic strip for inspiration. As he says of one of the strips and how it relates to the South China Morning Post endeavor.
It's about adventure, right? It's about taking what you have in hand and going on adventure. They're riding a toboggan down a snowy hill with very little control of where they're headed in the actual journey. So yes, very much like taking on this adventure.
And as in any company's transformative effort, there's a general aversion to change. Some outsiders were sympathetic to Gary and the newsroom's task to gain access to content that can be trusted.
But like everybody dealing with China, he's walking a tightrope. That's not easy.
Join us for episode 2 of Selling the Truth, The Reluctant Hero. Thank you for listening. Selling the Truth is a WF360 production, produced by Susan Bird with help from Lori Kutz, fact-checking by Laura Kim, and sound editing from Transition Productions. Deep thanks to the SEMP employees, including tech and digital team members, reporters, and other staffers, and the many other individuals around the world who shared their candid responses to my many questions. Special thanks to Gary Liu, SEMP's CEO, for generously spending hours in conversation with me about his unique perspective on this story with worldwide significance. You can find links to more information, including supporting articles, in our show notes and on our website at WF360Productions.com. If you enjoyed this episode of Selling the Truth, tell your friends and give us a favorable review and subscribe or follow us on your favorite listening app. Your feedback will help other people discover this important conversation about journalism, news, and the truth. How we search for it, how we access it, how we consume it, and in the end, who we choose to trust to deliver it.